From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capital Notes Podcast for May 7th. I'm John Myers from KQED, Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly.
An allergy sufferer.
Yeah, they're bad this season, aren't they? Gosh. You and me both.
It's windy. It's everybody.
Yeah, so if you sound a little off in this podcast, people will know what it is, though I would actually submit.
I've got a list of substances that are actually
well, I was going to actually submit. I'm not sure when you've sounded on. How would people know?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know, John. You tell me.
I don't know. Your brain's still working, though, right?
Again, there's going to you're going to open up a whole debate here.
Okay.
We don't about have assumptions of the question.
We don't have time for that. We need to get right to all the big California politics news of the week. So let's go right at it. First of all, we probably should talk about the race for governor since we had some stuff happening this week. Let's backtrack to the big Republican gubernatorial throwdown on Sunday, the debate from San Jose.
You had your hands full, didn't you, Mr. Moderator?
I did. I've never moderated a debate before. I've been on a panel of reporters for a few.
I thought you did an excellent job.
Why, thank you. You should say that since you're sitting here in the podcast.
That's right. You pay my podcast salary
in
after
the podcast pod of the studio. Yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting. I think we all knew Poizner was gonna have to come out swinging. He really didn't have any choice.
Right.
You know, I mean, the race has really shown he has to do something major to shake it up. He tried a few times. I mean, you know, we can talk about whether that was successful or not. I think most of the punditry world after the debate said that he was spirited. Whitman called him angry in the post-debate press conference. But he came out fiery. He was fired up about it. I don't think Whitman had any major missteps, and so I don't know that I would christen necessarily him the winner or her the winner. But I think that he did help drive the narrative that is causing problems for the Whitman campaign right now,
right, well,
about her finances, her role in eBay and Goldman Sachs and all of this stuff. I mean, just the big picture here for me is that she could not have been less lucky with the national news about Goldman Sachs.
You're feeling sorry for her, aren't
Wall
you,
Street
John?
Greed. I'm not feeling
sorry
for her, but
for
I'm just
her.
Saying. I mean, you know, here's a campaign, a most expensive campaign in California history, right? They, you know, they've got this little thing over there that I'm not saying is little by definition, but before the national news wasn't as big of a story. And then
the Goldman's.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And then it got paired with this national story, and now it just continues to be this narrative, right?
Right, and it has provided an opening for Democrats and for Steve Poizner. And I think Poizner
together.
This debate shows that sort of, that Poizner has found a campaign message. If nothing else, I think a couple of things. Number one, the Goldman Sachs stuff, and number two, the Arizona immigration law have kind of given Poizner a platform from which to, you know, to deliver his message and to hone his message. I think that's what we're starting to see here. You know, 4.5 weeks out from the campaign.
You think the Arizona immigration thing plays big in this primary because he came out in support of it and she said she wouldn't have signed it if it was a California deal?
I think that immigration is a code issue in this state. It's a way to rally conservative voters, apparently, still. You know, a lot of Republicans are deeply conflicted about how to handle the issue of immigration. I think Republicans in this state are spooked since the fallout from the Prop 187 debate post-1994 and the sort of moving all the Latino voters into the Democratic camp and in which, remember, back in the mid-90s, people thought Latinos were going to be moving towards Republicans. This was going to be the key to the new Republican majority in California. And then, you know, everybody blames the Prop 187 campaign, Pete Wilson, blah, blah, blah. That's another podcast,
yes,
right?
Right. If we need to roll back that far for you, you probably shouldn't be listening to your podcast right now.
Good point. But I do think that that the immigration debate, you know, on some level, factors in maybe not as the most important issue, but as sort of a code issue. And so, you know, we really don't know how to talk about immigration in this state openly and politically. I don't know if a campaign is a good place for an open debate, a serious policy discussion of an issue. I guess in a perfect world, it would happen that way. But I do think it's allowed Poizner to sort of abbreviate his appeal to conservative voters through support for this law while hammering Whitman on the Goldman Sachs issue. And I think that those two things have become the thrust of the Poizner campaign, at least over the last week or two.
There's been this sense for a long time, since those first statewide polls that showed a blowout in this race, that there was an air of inevitability
right.
in this race. That right. Whitman was, it was a fait accompli, she was going to win.
And they've played that up. Her campaign has played that up.
Well, yeah, and I was going to say, but and so what's interesting about that is that, you know, I'm trying to get, like, you know, the appropriate image in my head of a campaign that is, I don't want to call them on cruise control, because I want to be fair to them. I mean, they have tried to, at the same time they played it up, also continue to sprinkle in these, well, you know, we're not taking anything for granted comments. But nonetheless, you had a feeling as though this was a primary on cruise control for a long time. And now the question is, it's almost like, I don't want to say that the engine of the car is off, but the question is, can she keep coasting, you know, can right. that momentum pull her over the line? I mean, even when we're about to talk about polls here in a minute, there was this discussion in the polling chatter of the news this week of, you know, what really just matters is that we get over the 50% threshold, which,
right.
which, you know, is a series of lowering expectations too. But I think there is some truth to that. I mean, at the end of the day,
right.
can she just keep enough momentum?
It's like college. It's like a college basketball game, right?
Okay, you see, so I've gone college from cars. Basketball. Now you're going to basketball.
I'm going college basketball,
which I should have.
Imagine that Duke is losing by 25 points.
Never
Duke
would happen. Never would happen. Said the alum. Go ahead. I'm with you. I'd be drinking, but that's another
story. But it is one of those things. You open up a big early lead, and then suddenly the other team starts to close and come back, and you know the lead is 16, the lead is 12, and they're sort of key barriers along the way. And the question is, can the Whitman campaign, using this analogy, make a couple of just key baskets at pivotal moments to kind of dampen Poisoner's momentum? I mean, the race is tightening. The race is closing.
Let's talk about all the polling stuff. And first of all, I mean, political reporters love this because this does kind of get
can
us.
I
this,
say,
this
can
just
I say,
does
though,
give us into a bit of a horse race. We like this.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. But the coverage of the – well, I'm not a fan of the way polls are covered.
I'm not either. But right. I'm just saying we all start to go, ooh, look, there's some drama to this.
Yeah, it's great. You know, I mean, no, and I don't mean to minimize the drama in the race, but I'm just saying sometimes I think the media, and you know, I'm guilty of this as well, sometimes spoils for a fight just for a fight's sake and can tweak a narrative in order to promote a fight. And look, I'm always very, very skeptical of private polling coming from any source.
As am I. So let's talk about the polling. Because I don't know how much writing anyone should be doing about polls that they can't see the entire methodology.
And it ends up on the front page of news. Anyway.
Yeah. Well,
anyway.
No, but we got to talk about the polls. You're not in the wrong place to talk about that. So we started to get all this chatter among the political insider class that there were polls out there showing this race dramatically tightening. There was this
Democrats have
single digits.
Democrats have some polling showing that.
Yeah, single.
Poisoner has some polling showing
single
that.
Single digits. You know, the 50-point lead into single digits, which, of course, is also an apples to oranges comparison because you're taking a public statewide poll measured at one snapshot in time versus a private poll that we don't know if it's a push poll. We don't know what it is. But let's just stick with the big picture here for a moment.
It may not be legitimate, but let's treat it legitimately.
Well, no, but don't get in the soapbox yet. I'm not saying you can in a moment. Let's just at least set the table, shall we, Mr. York, and then you can pull the tablecloth off.
I was just going to go to the trough, actually.
Trough table. Man, we are metaphor kings today. Okay, so there was chatter that the race had gone down to single digits.
Yes.
Poisoner campaign has a conference call with reporters on Wednesday saying that the gap is 10 points.
I know. They scheduled one, and then the Whitman folks preempted.
Exactly right. The Whitman people sensed that the Poisoner people were talking at 1:30, so they scheduled a 1 p.m. conference call.
Ridiculous.
That just miraculously ended on time, but that's another story.
It was good Twitter fodder, though.
It was. Yeah, you were all over that, weren't you?
I was tweeting the calls.
You were the king of tweets.
Yes.
So, the Poisoner people said it's a 10-point gap. The Whitman people said, well, we're in the field now. Yes, it's closed some, but it's not that. Mike Murphy, the top strategist for Meg Whitman, said it's, you know, alluded to a number more around the 20s. We don't really know any of that. And let's be fair, we don't have a new statewide poll yet. I think what I'm hearing is that we may get a new statewide poll in the next 10 days
That's
or so.
Privileged
like
information.
That. But I'm not saying who, where, or how. But there's going to be a new statewide poll. Well, we all know before this race is over, before election day.
Yes, I think that's fair.
Okay, so we got a lot of spin about polls. And it's hard to tell if we just back up. I mean, we can pick those apart a little bit because we haven't seen, as I said, any of the methodology. We don't know exactly who was queried. We don't know what the typical Republican primary voter, their sampling is versus who will really show up.
Right.
All of those kind of things are huge caveats. But there was enough chatter about it that makes you think that both camps sense there's something there they need to deal with.
Yeah.
Either just the perception, and maybe it's a lot of that, but also maybe some reality.
Well, and they both said the campaign is going according to plan. Right. I thought that was really
in which case great.
Right. So maybe you know somebody's got a bad plan. You know, we'll see who that is if that's true. But I don't know. I mean,
all is well.
You try to step back a little bit from this and kind of in as much as you can try to sort of take the temperature of the campaign team. I mean, look, polls. I remember one poll showing Dan Lundgren within striking distance of Gray Davis 4 days away from the 1998 election, right? And it was bogus.
How'd that
right?
work out?
It was a private poll, right?
Davis clobbered him.
Right. Now, look, I mean, I think this race is tightening. I don't know how much. I don't know. You know, I mean, the momentum is clearly with Poizner, I think. I mean, in as much as
assuming
just
that's enough momentum, and therein lies
the question.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what I tried to do yesterday on this call, on these Warren calls, was to kind of take the temperature of the messengers, you know, get a sense of who was spinning wildly and who was, you know, who was sort of confident in the message they were delivering. I don't know what you were on both calls. What did you think of the delivery from the Poizner folks and the Whitman folks?
Well, the problem is that the personalities of the people involved somewhat color that too. I mean, if you're going to say for reporters who've covered like Mike Murphy, for example, who's the top strategist for Whitman
and soundbite king,
he's a pretty caffeinated up kind of guy, you know. So I mean,
and he'll throw at things like Dracula switching to apple
right.
juice.
So if someone to say he would sound like, you know, tense and all jittery and whatever, and go, oh, they must be nervous. It's kind of hard to say because I think that's kind of Murphy's MO versus on the Poizner call, Stu Stevens, one of his top strategists, is a pretty mellow kind of way that he talks. And so do you say, oh, well, they're confident.
He's like the Big Lebowski of campaign consultants, isn't
nice.
He?
Stu I like
Stevens.
That.
I think Stevens would like that.
That's
too.
A good Hollywood reference.
Yeah.
But so I don't know that you can measure it that way. I think that everybody acknowledges that the race does have some competitive features to it. They disagree about how competitive it
competitive
is.
Competitive features.
I know.
Like band name. Competitive
features.
Yes. Yeah.
That's good. It's like real alt-rock kind
yeah,
of
exactly.
thing. But I tell you, you know, it all also, too, depends on when a poll's in the field. I mean, that's the other thing, too.
Right.
You know, when are you measuring? Are you measuring pre that debate? I don't know how many people watched the debate. It was on cable TV. I mean, you know, there
I
was
watched
one.
It.
I want to say there was one newspaper in particular that said, oh, well, not many people watched it, to which, you know, maybe I'm offended because I was the moderator. But my reaction is, you have no idea. It's on cable television. It's on Comcast.
Right.
It's on C-SPAN, Cal Channel. There are no ratings numbers for that. Sorry.
Right.
You don't have those numbers to really give an accurate. But the point is, the press covered it. So
you
it was a lot
you
of press
buried
coverage.
Conan on 60 Minutes. And
did we?
No, I don't know.
No, it was 5 in the afternoon, so it was the wrong time for that. But there was a lot of press coverage of it. So you don't know if the polls were in the field pre-debate, after the debate. This Poizner ad about the vultures, I think
right.
everybody acknowledges has gotten a lot of attention, certainly in the press, about the vulture funds at Goldman Sachs that Meg Whitman, you know, supposedly invested in and, you know, how horrible that is. So, you know, it all depends on what is the public really paying attention to, you know, and then what do they think? And then what I found fascinating about this call, and a couple of other people have picked up on this, is this whole favorable, unfavorable thing.
Right, right.
And that, you know, the Poizner people believe that both candidates have an unfavorable opinion right now, that the voters have an unfavorable opinion of both candidates, but that Whitman's is worse and Poizner's is only because Whitman's been beating her up, not because they actually don't like him. But just
right.
because they haven't gotten his side of the story. Versus the Whitman people say, oh, well, you know, his are still high, and on and on and on. And so for those of you who are not usually spun by the political chattering class, welcome to our world.
We're going to forward you our calls.
And emails.
Yeah.
And tons of them.
You know, look, the Poizner numbers were, what, 38, 28? I think there is something to the—
You mean
look,
for the— for
yeah,
Whitman
over,
at 38, Poizner at 28,
right.
which would be about a third of the voters in that poll undecided, which
right.
I think is interesting. But
right.
go ahead.
I do think that some of Whitman's support is soft. I mean, she does not have a political track record, and this sort of—we've talked about this before— about how the race to define Meg Whitman would determine a lot about her support. I mean, I think she was able to define herself at first going out on the air on radio late last year and up on TV early this year. And since then, you know, events that we've mentioned have conspired where, you know, Democrats have gotten involved trying to define her. Poizner has run has put millions of dollars into a campaign to help define Meg Whitman. And so you're seeing some of that support soften. I think that's real. I think that the Poizner poll is picking that up, and I think that is real. The question is, you know, you can't just vote. It's not a yes or no on Meg Whitman. You got to vote for somebody. And the question is, will voters find Steve Poizner to be a viable alternative, a likable alternative, and a preferable alternative to Meg Whitman? That's the big question, right?
And will they take into account this side issue of who they think can beat Jerry Brown? Because that often in a lot of campaigns, that's not just this campaign, you know, people like us and academics too always wonder, does a voter go, and I try to think about it, I'm a voter,
yeah.
But you know, you go into the polls and you go, do I pick the person I really like or the person I think will beat the person I really don't like? I'm not here to say for sure that Whitman can beat Brown more than Poizner, but there is a conventional wisdom of that. And so we don't really know what Republican voters would prefer.
Right. And it's not just Republican voters. They the Whitman folks estimate about 8 to 10% of the voters in the Republican primary will be declined to state voters. So
I have a hard time buying that.
Yeah. We'll see.
And I guess the reason is because decline to state voters, and maybe this is because I'm reading some data on some other stuff about decline to state voters right now. My head is all colored with it. But decline to state voters often pull often vote Democratic more than
in
Republican.
In this state. They're like 2-1.
In this
right?
state.
Yeah.
But also, too, decline to state voters don't seem to know that they can pull a party ballot in a primary. Either don't know right. or don't want to. When you look at the number of decline to state voters who actually pull a Democratic or Republican ballot, and by the way, folks, if you're a decline to state voter, you can walk into the polling place and pick a party ballot.
Right.
But a lot of them just pick that nonpartisan ballot. So I just am always skeptical of saying the decline to states in a primary are going to save
me. Yeah. Well, I don't know about save.
Well,
but
be a significant factor,
right.
yada, yada.
Yeah.
Yada, yada. Well, so...
So,
meantime, Jerry Brown laying low.
Jerry who?
No,
he's suing CalPERS officials, former CalPERS officials.
Back in his job as Attorney General.
Yeah. Is that what that is?
Exactly right.
Funny. Silly me. I thought it was something else.
The party politicians might tell you otherwise that it helps keep him in the headlines.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, I mean, I will just say this about the Brown campaign. Again, very quiet. Their strategy, I have to assume, is just wait until June 9th before you do much more.
At least. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with Poizner making the case they want to make about Whitman.
And right I think that's it. I mean, I think that Poizner spending millions against Whitman allows Brown to lay low, you know, without much problem. And so if there was concern, you know, I mean, this is in many ways shaping up about as well as Jerry Brown could have hoped.
Yeah. Don't you think we're going to see another big drop of money from Poizner? Doesn't he need that? Or do you think that the money he's put in will buy him enough at the, you know, $2 to $3 million, probably $3 million a week statewide buy that he has to have. Yada.
Well,
yada,
it won't
yada.
Buy him. I mean, I don't. You know, he put in about $15 million total, right? You know, I'm sure that the campaign has bought time for the
that.
End for the end of the. You know, you buy
back
from
time
election day backwards.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I think that's going to be a real test here in the next week or two.
Of course,
whether
their campaign did say they haven't done any real advertising in the Bay Area yet.
Which
doesn't exactly seem like a place that Poizner will get a lot of votes.
It's where he's from.
Yeah, true.
I mean, Silicon Valley.
Of course, they're both from there.
Right, right.
They were both home.
Maybe not in San Francisco. The Bay Area is more than just San Francisco.
They were both home.
Your communist brethren in San Francisco, John.
Thank you. It's a Bay Area news organization. They said they were both home at the San Jose debate. Anyway, all right, well, we'll obviously got a lot more to talk about that.
I guess it would be comrades, not brethren, right? My
okay.
bad. My bad.
Okay, whatever. Whatever. Working blog king for the liberal LA Times.
And small business entrepreneur at
Capital
Weekly.
Capital Weekly.
CapitalWeekly.net.
Right. Maybe,
Capital with an O.
Maybe you and Ms. Whitman could talk about, and Mr. Poizner, their plans for small business.
Well, Whitman's a big business. Well, anyway,
let's talk about, let's transition to big oil.
Huh, okay.
That's a weak transition.
That was not.
So this week's other news, we want to talk about budget stuff here just for a moment before we head out of the studio. The week's other big news, which was a shocker, I think, to everyone, especially because there had been a lot of defense of the governor's position right up until the very moment he said, I've changed my mind, was on Monday when the governor announced he was formally dropping his support for the Trancheon Ridge offshore drilling project off the coast of northern Santa Barbara County. Limited, for those of you who do not know at this point, and of course maybe then you would be listening to the podcast, a limited drilling proposal crafted by environmentalists down in Santa Barbara, some of the local environmentalists, in exchange for removing four platforms ahead of schedule. So a little more drilling now for a lot less drilling in the future, so went the argument. State would get a royalty, $100 million this year, about 100 and, I don't know, 19 or something like that next year. So real money for a state in trouble. Governor said, I've seen too much TV footage from the Gulf Coast of this disaster. I'm sure those people were promised it was safe there, too. I don't think anything's safe. I no longer support it. Boom, pulled the rug out from the environmentalists who had been fighting with their fellow environmentalists in Santa Barbara County, pulled the rug out from the oil company, pulled the $100 million probably that got his budget writers pulling their hair out before the revised budget comes out next week. What do you make of all this? What do we make of all of it?
He changed his mind. The issue's off the table. And Abel Maldonado can breathe a sigh of relief. He doesn't have to.
Maldonado now sitting on the Lands Commission
as the
governor.
No longer the swing vote.
No longer has to worry about it. And the stock price of the company in question, PXP, dropped almost 6% the first day after the governor made this thing because, I mean, you know, this is huge money to them. And they, I don't know that they thought their chances were great right now, but they at least were still in the game. I mean, they still had an uphill battle with Maldonado and the Lands Commission. With Arnold pulling it out, it's over.
Yeah, that's over.
For now. For now. If Whitman or Poizner becomes governor, who knows?
Who knows? Well, right. And then Maldonado or Sam Onestad becomes lieutenant governor.
I just want to talk about Schwarzenegger, though, for a moment, because, I mean, this is, you know, this goes back to that way to try to understand who he is, how he thinks, what he does.
Well, look, I mean, he reversed himself on health care a week ago as well. Right,
but this is just a great one for me, and maybe I have an interest in it because I've covered the Trancheon Ridge story so much. But just watching all of these statements of Arnold Schwarzenegger since he entered this political arena several years ago, where I don't like offshore oil drilling, I'm opposed to it. I'm opposed to new offshore oil drilling, et cetera, et cetera. Then the Trancheon Ridge project came along. And especially when it had this money attached to it, the governor pulled it into the budget debate last year, which I think made it radioactive because then it looked like it was all about money. In January, just 4 months ago, less than 4 months ago, late January, when I asked him about it at the Sacramento Press Club, and I'll never forget the quote where he said, you know, well, sometimes you've got to look beyond your principles. And we're in a fiscal crisis and we've got to look beyond our principles, which really said something, I think, about what he really valued and the necessity of the money. Now, on Monday, he said, well, it's not, I don't care about the money. There's no price to something like this, effectively, and we'll find the money somewhere else. And it's just very hard to figure out what makes Arnold Schwarzenegger tick. What makes him tick? I mean, because this is, you know.
You're asking me?
I don't know. Did he go home and he just saw the TV images and he just said, I can't do it? Or did his kids influence him this time? That's happened in the past. Did his wife influence him? And I'm not saying he doesn't have his own opinions. And also, too, at the end of the day, the guy already knows he's in a $20 billion hole and the $100 million isn't really going to get him out of it that badly. And why not just get rid of it? You know, it's already probably dead anyway. You know what I'm saying? It's already probably dead anyway. It's probably not going to pass. Hey, I look like a good guy by pulling it. You know, I mean, I just don't know. And I'm not saying he's not principled. I just don't know where he's coming from. And so there you go.
Okay. Moving on.
You just don't have anything to offer on
well,
that.
What do you want me to tell you?
I don't know.
Hey, let's bring him in. Put him on the couch next week.
And here he is. Governor? Okay. No. If he ever showed up on the podcast, I would have to bump you for that one.
Okay. You wouldn't let me sit in?
No.
Well,
yes, maybe.
I want to renegotiate my contract.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Well, so that oil project obviously does cause another $100 million that have to be fixed.
Least of our problems.
But the governor's revised budget comes out next Friday.
Uh-huh.
Don't know how we'll figure out the podcast schedule for that to talk about.
I think we should do a post-budget podcast, maybe post-it
Yeah, we'll
Friday
have to
afternoon.
Check. Don't be surprised if it doesn't show up in your iPod on the exact right time because the governor's event is at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday, and I got to figure out how we do that podcast, folks. So anyway, so that's $100 million they've got to figure out. The legislative leaders, Assembly Speaker John Perez, Senate President Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg, have just gotten back from a big trip to D.C. this week where they were lobbying for federal money. Everybody now keeps using a number of $3 billion, maybe $4
billion
out of the feds to help the $20 billion problem, much less than what the governor wanted in January, which was $7 billion. And so, you know, that leaves a lot to be desired, too. And the other thing I just...
$3 billion right there.
Yeah. The other thing is just interesting about that, too, going, which goes back to the whole Schwarzenegger narrative, is just, it was a story, and the story that I did this week on that, I just couldn't help but notice when you went back to what the governor wanted in January, the line-by-line kind of money he got. He got almost none of that.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't get a lot of that stuff. Money for undocumented felons, for incarcerating them.
Right.
Money for special education. You know, ongoing federal
from
dollars
the feds,
versus
right.
these one-time dollars. And the governor even said in that press conference at the budget, when I said something about that to him, he said, you know, I don't want one-time money.
Right.
Well, he had to accept one-time money. And let's face it, one-time money is better than no-time money.
Yep.
So, you know... There's a lot of angst, I think, at this point, wouldn't you say, about how you fix this $20 billion hole? Most people I've talked to said you can probably do the math to $10 billion. Not easy, but they can see a path. The second $10 billion is really tough to figure out how you solve.
Punt.
Punt. Well, there's a lot of talk right now, too. I don't know if you're hearing this, that one, a really politically... distasteful option is going to have to be on the table and talked about a lot, and that is suspending Prop 98, the education funding guarantee. Because when you suspend Prop 98, you get to automatically lower it to whatever number you want to lower it to because you have problems. Prop 98 allows that, but then you have to make that money back up and under a very controlled schedule. And it's politically tough to say you're doing that in an election year, is it not? When you're saying you're suspending the funding for schools.
When everyone, I mean, schools are a bipartisan issue. I mean, you hear Republicans and Democrats talking about education. And I think if Prop 98 is suspended, it'll be that much more of an issue come November.
And also, too, because it has been so rarely suspended. It's
believe
really
twice.
Only, yeah, and I was going to say almost really only once. It was suspended after the Loma Prieta quake, but they kind of put an asterisk by that one because it was a weird suspension.
Right.
And then Arnold Schwarzenegger. Got the teachers.
It wasn't suspended. It was rebenched.
It was rebased. Yeah, exactly. But it was a suspension in 2004 when the governor came in after the recall. So it's politically volatile, and who knows? And you know, but at the end of the day, it is such a big part of the general fund. You're looking at $10 billion. It's not surprising that's going to be talked about.
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, and the education portion of it is roughly what $40 billion, 45 for K. Well. We'll see.
Give or take.
Yep.
Give or take. And tax revenues were not good, too. And that's the other thing influencing this budget debate, too, is
for the year, they're pretty close. They're, aren't they? I mean, they were a couple billion ahead. They were short a couple billion in April.
Or maybe a little bit more.
Yep.
We haven't seen all the final numbers. But, you know, one of the things that when I was talking to a good budget expert around the building the other day – pointed out, which I think is somewhat noteworthy, that all of that angst we went through at the beginning of the year about the legislature meeting in special session to deal with the budget, and the you know, and we had the fight, and the part that the governor didn't veto ended up being a small fraction.
Yes.
That's almost been completely wiped out now by the lower than expected tax revenues. So we're almost back at square one. All of that fighting in the winter has almost completely evaporated what we got out of that. Now we're back at, you know, we'll see what the number really is.
And now we have a new speaker, a new Assembly Republican leader, leaders who have not negotiated Big Five. I think fair to say there are some personality differences between the governor and the speaker. So, you know, there are all sorts of things that are going to make this a very complicated summer.
Complicated.
Yes.
That's a good way to describe it.
Yes.
Ugly, complicated.
It's complicated, John.
As his life. Okay. And with that, we will take our
Simply say goodbye.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I was going to say we take our complicated self out. I like that bet. We'll simply say goodbye. That's Anthony York, pithy as he always is. I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.